Welcome to Classy Coders, episode 2.5, a podcast that connects computer science professionals with educators to discuss the state of computer science education and career readiness. In this episode, Greg and Matt continue their discussion of the landscape of computer science education and professional learning. You'll hear about how constant learning is a given in computer science fields, as well as almost all other professional settings, how vital it is to spark curiosity in the minds of young learners, and how computer science comes with a unique ability to empower learners and developers to take on new and exciting challenges. This is Classy Coders. Matt, you were just saying how there was a work-based learning class in one of your schools, and those students prompted their own project when the website they were using didn't do the things they needed it to do. I think that there's a big opportunity there for students to identify the problems they think need solving. Greg?
I wonder, the flip side is kind of like the student-driven projects, too. There's something to be said about knowing what current problems are and current challenges faced by businesses, but finding that space for people to come up with their own ideas and pursue them and have that sense of achievement is something else, too. I don't know how that would work with an industry collaboration. Because it's the first thing that comes to mind is, well, funding.
Right.
I got this idea, I want funding, which with code and software, fortunately, isn't that big a deal. You got a computer, make it happen, but I'm sure it pops up here and there.
Yeah, like Shark Tank. We could have, like, industry Shark Tank.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and I see opportunity for that in the same classroom where a private business comes and says, I want to develop a website, and one kid raises their hand, and it's like, I'd like to build my own website for me, and you're like, great. And I can imagine that there is or could be space for both of these approaches, either business-led or student-led in the same classroom. I can see so much potential in this if there was the right kind of connection between industry and education, where there could be a real back and forth of idea sharing while learning is also occurring. Industry could bring ideas to students for solutions, but also making sure that good ideas get in front of the right eyes is so important. Greg, you mentioned the Da Vinci Center before, my alma mater. And you're so right. The real-world expertise I got from solving industry problems was some of the most practical I've received. And when you get that experience in an education setting where failure is much more tolerable, it can be really empowering. I think we've really gotten to a point where I can ask another question, if I may. If you could change one thing about computer science education, what would it be and why?
So, I guess maybe I should start with that one, because
sure.
I don't know if you know.
I haven't been taught computer science in a very long time.
Well, I think, like I talked about before, I really love how we in Virginia have the K-8 computer science standards that are supposed to be integrated, and we have a lot of computer science offerings at the high school level, but I think because of the way that they're structured, if it's not a priority for a school division or a school or a department or a teacher, then it can be something that can kind of slide under the radar.
Sure.
And isn't brought into the classroom. And I think, luckily, you know, for me and my team and where I work, it is a priority. And so we are working really hard to kind of spark an interest in teachers so that there's a lot of teachers already doing a lot of the computer science standards, but they just don't know that it's the computer science standard, so we're trying to educate there. But we're also trying to encourage teachers to, you know, try new things. Right now it's a really hard time to be a teacher. I feel like people say that a lot. But there's a lot of mandates and expectations coming down from the state. And while I think it'll lead to great outcomes, getting there is going to be tough. And it's been a really tough year. But our computer science ambassadors program has kind of like sparked love in teaching and teachers. So I think reaching out to as many teachers as possible is a great idea for anybody out there. But it's interesting to me that it's K-8. Yeah, I know we have 9-12 computer science classes that are standalone, but I would love to see a pre-K-12 progression for computer science in Virginia to see, okay, well, first, even though every school may not have a pre-K program, a lot of them do, and we should start with pre-K.
Oh.
I think we should talk about, you know, what we can expose them to and how they can get creative and curious about computer science. And then for 9 through 12, we shouldn't just assume, okay, well, all of the students are going to take computer science classes, because they're not. So if computer science integration is a way that, sparks love of learning in elementary and middle school, I don't see it any different in a high school history class. I think there are teachers who are integrating computer science, but there's no like real roadmap for them to follow. So if we kind of expanded from K-8 to pre-K-12, I think that would be really beneficial for Virginia.
Yeah. It's sort of underlying that, it does sound like, teachers are overworked. Let's just acknowledge that there's a lot too much work for teachers to do in their day-to-day. But it feels like a heavier lift to integrate computer science into a history lesson than just to teach the history lesson. But what you're also saying, and I understand that perception, and I think Code VA's mission is to try and one, simultaneously create the tools to make it easier, but also to just tell teachers, create awareness that it is not as hard as it feels like it might be. You want to teach this particular history lesson, here's the same history lesson with computer science in it. We've built you the curriculum, we've built the tools that you need. But if you, I guess what I kind of heard is that if you could change the mind, the perception of what it means to integrate computer science, like that would maybe be the biggest thing that you could change, because that's what I would change at least.
Yeah, and I think people find a lot of joy, and it's a fun challenge and a fun problem. And I think they do get that I beat that boss in Elden Ring feeling when they do something like this. And any opportunity we can spark joy and love in teachers today, I think is well worth it. And from my experience, computer science has been one of those areas. So as we just have to make sure that grows beyond that small circle. So I think, there's some ways we can do that.
This has brought up a lot of thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
From things like pushing kids to be builders, or not pushing them, but kind of
Encouraging.
encourage that builder mentality in children, which makes me think of Montessori schools and that kind of pick your own path sort of approach, which for my kids was great. And it helped them really learn the lessons in their own way. I don't know how much that could be brought into the public schools. The other one with education, and I hear pieces of it, is that push to kind of incorporate computers as tools in the educational environment, and that kind of being integrated through the whole school. That sounds like a great approach. And then there's also just a more hardcore computer science, software engineering type thing that is also important. So lots of different moving parts. I really think letting kids kind of choose their own way and bring up their own projects, get that sense of accomplishment for making stuff work, helps build up that builder mentality as well as letting them develop with their own interests, like a Montessori type approach.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're. That's probably too early to talk about it, but I'm still going to do it anyway. So then it'll
Sure.
hold my feet to the fire. So in Goochland, we're taking kind of that mindset, what you just expressed, an approach to computer science where we have these K-8 computer science standards, but how can we build pathways to meet the needs of different students? And maybe we do have, a group of students who they want to go into computer programming, and then how do we make sure that they get on the pathway that they need to succeed and to find the either path to higher education or career right after graduation. But then also maybe there's a pathway for a student who just really loves to create things in more of an artistic way of approach to computing. How do we build a pathway for them? So we're thinking about how do we build these K-12 computer science pathways that meet the needs of all of these different groups. And it kind of reminds me of the way that you were talking about choosing your own kind of adventure in education. So hopefully that'll come to fruition sometime soon.
Yeah, I did want to ask one more thing of you, Greg. In the last episode of the podcast, me and Tyler, the guest, talked about the variety of learning methods that he and I both used to learn new skills. And as somebody who's in the professional industry, one, do you find yourself needing to learn new skills somewhat often, depending on the project that you're working on or things like that? Are you Are you Googling how to solve a problem? Are you Googling what a particular error code might mean? And then are you using any other tools to continue and further your personal education? We talked about using, there's the Anki Flashcards app, there's YouTube videos, there's podcasts, there's practice tests that you can download, there's Udemy and Coursera courses. And I have personally used about, you know, four out of the six of those to just accomplish one particular project. I found that I needed to vary my learning at, you know, styles or resources to maintain an interest, to, you know, cover things that might not be covered in one of the other learning styles. And I guess so for both of you, have you found that same, I guess, method of learning? Have you found that you've needed to keep learning, or do you have your wheelhouse and you love your wheelhouse and that's, we're chilling?
I think in the software engineering world, if you are not a continuous learner, you're going to struggle tremendously. So all of those things that you mentioned are things that I will do and use in a more or less daily capacity. I'm not big into watching YouTube videos to figure out how to do my job, but they popped up.
Sure.
So I don't do a lot of courses either, but I have also done them. But yeah. Daily, like, you got to Google problems. You got to figure out what not just the answer to that immediate issue is, but how do you solve it in a way that's best for the whole system, which that's the part that's really takes the longest to pick up as you're doing it. Another approach I use is doing my own projects. So I almost always run various hobby projects. My current hobby project is fairbear.app.
Okay.
It's like a recipe website. So it's just something to mess around with where you can try out things in a less impactful environment. Cause with my job, you try not to break things very often.
Sure.
But when you've got a hobby site, well, it doesn't really matter. You can try it out and see what happens. So lots of different approaches to learning. You got to use them all. Whatever works best for your particular style. If you're an audible listener, YouTube's great. If you're more visual, then read.
Well, that's fascinating to think about. As someone who's a professional in the industry is like, yeah, I want to try something new. I'm going to use my own personal project to test it out, and then maybe I'll bring it into the professional setting. But it's fun to know that sort of, I guess, intimidation factor still exists. You know, it's still there. It's like I get intimidated looking at a large, you know, a coding problem or a large coding project that I might want to endeavor into. And then, you know, we teach things like decomposition at CodeVA, of like breaking down a problem into smaller pieces, which is how you build a program. You build a program by building the individual pieces and then making sure that they connect in the right ways. And that's where problems come up and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, it's very refreshing to hear from somebody who's been doing this a long time say, yeah, I learn all the time. Yeah, I'm worried about breaking stuff, so I test it out at home first. You know, I mean, that's beautiful to hear that, because I think that a lot of students feel like they need to get it right the first time. I feel like there's a lot of pressure.
That's a really good point, and that's talking about something that I would change about education, is trying to work it out so that kids don't feel like that, or people don't feel like that as they're writing software. In a professional environment, too, you don't have to get it right the first time either. I think people get stuck in an analysis paralysis kind of thing when they start to do that. But I guess that the self-projects brings up something else you mentioned, which was just building your own project as a way of learning. So it's just something it's how I learn best. I can't really go through a course. If I want to learn something, I have to be like, well, I want to just build this thing. Let's say I want to learn how to use AWS, or I want to learn how to use Golang or Rust. I would think of a project that uses those things.
Wow.
And just go, well, I'm going to write an app that calculates satellite trajectories and something like that. And that's how I learn.
I just got chilled. That was not what I expected you to say. You're like, yeah, that's
like, that's going to be my next hobby project. I just need to come up with a cute name for it, like Fairbear.
That is so cool.
Yeah, see, that's like the coolest thing I've heard in a long time. I'm just like, yeah, I was thinking about tracking satellites the other day, so I might write an app for it. I might not, you know, but it's like, that's what a, like, as the kids would say, what a flex. Like, that was awesome, you know, because it's, I do, and there's this interesting gap when you talk to career professionals about these things where you can say, I want to learn Rust. I want to do satellite trajectories. Let's marry those two things, and I'm going to noodle around with that at home in my own spare time. From somebody who has dabbled, who is not a deep diver like you are, particularly in this field, as a dabbler, that terrifies me. I'm objectively terrified right now. And so I approach those things looking for a YouTube video of like, this is how you code a satellite trajectory tracking app. And then I'm following this tutorial, I'm watching this person teach me how to do this thing, and I know that at the end, I'm going to be able to figure it out through Google, whatever the problems may be, but I want somebody to walk me to that solution. And I think that the bridge between dabbler and deep diver is a long bridge. And Matt is the guardian of that bridge. He's the shepherd, the person bringing the people across that bridge or helping people get across that bridge. And I don't think it's easy to acknowledge when you get from one side to the other. I don't think it's readily apparent all the time. But I find that fascinating that at some point these kids are going to say, I want to learn this coding language. I'm going to try and build this app and do this thing because I have enough institutional knowledge to know the steps to get there. But without that institutional knowledge, yeah.
That's a good point. I was going to say that there's like a stepping off a ledge kind of thing. And I'd call that the activation energy. So I've been doing this a while. For me to say, well, I'm going to write an app in Rust just to learn it is not a big deal.
Right.
But when I was a kid, I specifically remember wanting to make my own video game. And I wanted a little leprechaun to run across the screen and jump around, probably like Mario did. And I sat down at a computer. So like my mom worked remote in the 80s. And so we had a computer at home. And I pulled up an editor. And I was like, no, I have no idea what I'm doing. Right. And that was the end of it. So like,
and then you just stopped.
Yeah. The activation energy going from idea to execution was so big that there was just, where do you even start?
Right.
And I think that's where these educational programs come in, is you reduce that activation energy. So you have some creative idea that's going to contribute to the world, not like a leprechaun video game, but some idea.
Sure, it's important.
Yeah.
The leprechaun, Robbie.
Right.
Strong.
Yeah.
Big leprechaun.
But how do you reduce that activation energy so kids can, or people, not just kids, people can do what bring their ideas to life?
Yeah, I love that. I think, just giving students opportunity to fail, try things, expose them to new ways of doing things, all super important. And I think it's so great to hear about how how you open that question. Basically, like, if you're not a lifelong learner and you're in this field, you're going to have a bad time. And that makes me so happy because we say that to kids all the time. They don't believe us. They're like, oh, yeah, we will learn what we need to learn and then we'll be good and we can do our thing. And I try to explain. I'm like, if I did that, I don't think I'd be at my job right now because I learn new things every single day.
Yeah. There's not a lot of jobs where you stop.
No.
Yeah, that is true. That is, yeah. It's not just a computer science career path thing, right. I guess. We don't want to scare anyone away. Like, any job you go to, I talked to a kid out there who wants to go into veterinary science. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you don't, if you just stop learning after horses, you're going to have a bad time. It's like, then you're just a horse doctor. And it's like, if in this industry especially, like, maybe you are just a Python coder. Maybe you are only HTML or backend or somebody who calls themselves full stack. And I still don't fully understand what that means, but if you think that there is an end goal, as opposed to thinking about it with this growth mindset, it is a switch that you've got to train in your mind where when you feel like you don't need to learn anything else, change that thought, mm-hmm. Identify that thought and change it because it's going to keep you motivated and keep you successful in this industry, because from what I've heard from both of you is the biggest key to success is never stop learning, mm-hmm. So with that, I will invite you both. Any final thoughts, anything that you wish you'd said? No?
I appreciate this. This was great. And it was great learning about what you do, Greg. I mean, I feel like this is such a good idea, bringing schools, industry together and just talking.
Yeah, I feel like it's really highlighted a lot of interesting points that CodeVA tries to tries to talk about, but, you know, hearing it from, you know, for lack of a better word, the horse's mouth. A lot of horse stuff in this episode. I'll have to trim that out. But yeah, you know, hearing it from the people who are doing the things is very important, I think. You know, we can be advocates from the nonprofit side because we are familiar with these problems, but hearing it from the people who are in these industries, I think, is super, super important. So thank you both for coming today. I really, really appreciate your time. Yeah, this has been Classy Coders.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Cool. Thank you so much for listening to Classy Coders. Tune in for our next episodes where we discuss some of the most valuable tools that educators use to teach computer science in schools and how those tools are empowering the next generation of technology innovators. Code Virginia is proud to support teachers all across the state, and if you're interested in learning more about what we do, visit www.codevirginia.org.